there were plenty of naysayers. It's like, Chicago's known for deep dish pizza. Mm-hmm. That is what Chicago is. And people were telling me, you can't go into Chicago with a New Haven-style pizza because, frankly, not many people know where New Haven is, let alone what New Haven-style pizza is. But I was confident that if we were able to come close to replicating the great pizza that we enjoyed growing up in New Haven on Worcester Street, that it would be well received. Because you don't have to tell people that something is good. You know, they put it in their mouths and they're like, this is damn good stuff.
From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smolin. Our mission on this podcast is to help you realize your dreams of doing meaningful work. Here you'll meet and be inspired by amazing people who overcame great odds. You'll discover what sparked them, how they explored work opportunities, the strategies that they employed to ensure career success, and the actions they boldly took to make it all happen. You'll also meet esteemed and nationally recognized thought leaders who are helping people like you to develop work skill, experience, and leadership, and seize opportunity from a changing world so that your beautiful work dreams turn into reality. Together, let's turn work meaningful, for meaningful work is the future of work. In this first part of a two-part episode, we discover how one entrepreneur dared, not once, but twice, to disrupt the established food scene in a major American city. In 1983, along with his three brothers, Billy Jacobs arrived in Chicago with a dream, to bake and sell fresh New York-style bagels. Their effort was a smashing success. After scaling Jacobs Brothers Bagels to 20 stores, they took a buyout offer. Billy's brothers went on to second-act careers, while Billy started dreaming again, to turn his next big disruption into reality. That's when his idea to bring to Chicago the classic New Haven-style pizza of his youth took shape. Soon after, Billy opened Peace, Pizzeria, and Brewery in Chicago's trendy Wicker Park neighborhood. According to industry trade publication Pizza Today, Peace is the highest-grossing single-location pizzeria in the United States. In August 2019, we sat down at Peace with Billy and our shared lifelong friend Stu Katz to discuss Billy's meaningful career story. So we're here with Billy Jacobs, owner of Peace Chicago Pizzeria and Brewery, and Stu Katz, his childhood friend from New Haven, actually my childhood friend as well. I have known these guys for, well, let's just say a long time. Gentlemen, welcome to The Tightrope.
Thanks for having me.
Me too.
So I'm going to start with Billy. Take us back to when you were a little kid in New Haven growing up. What did you dream about being when you were all grown up?
One, I just wanted to make it out of childhood. Given the crazy things that we did. Survival was the most important thing that was prominent in my mind. I think that as a child, you know, I at least thought that I might be an attorney like my dad.
So Richard Jacobs is your father,
right?
Prominent attorney in New Haven. You really thought you were going to follow that path?
Yeah, I mean, I admired him and didn't, you know, the whole family were lawyers. Both grandfathers, lawyers.
Right.
Cousin, uncles. I didn't see any other path, basically. So,
your brothers, Steve, Andy, and Pete, were they on sort of the same trajectory as you?
In terms of being
like what
an
they
entrepreneur?
Wanted to be?
Yeah. So let's just jump back. And that's when I'm a little kid. But then as I got older, I became a little more entrepreneurial and interested in business and food. And I think that more than my brothers, three brothers, and we're all 15 and 16 months apart. Keep that in mind. Very,
God
very
bless
close.
Your mother.
Right? When she was 24 years old, 25 years old, she had four little boys.
Wow.
Imagine that.
No, I cannot. Right? I was a first-time father at 40. No, I cannot imagine four children.
Four little boys.
I remember when we were all teenagers, you worked for Ashley's Ice Cream on like College Street in New Haven. Was that, did that light a spark in you?
That, absolutely. I mean, that was a big moment for me because, you know, I had been entrepreneurial and I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And I was just getting ready to go off to college.
Right.
Worked for these guys who took this beautiful product, this beautiful homemade ice cream, and delivered it to the public. And it was incredibly well received. And there were lines out the door. And I was their second employee. So I go off to school in Boston, determined to find my own product.
Right.
Like they did. They being Phil Carlin, and he started it. And then his brother Josh got involved. And Phil went to Brandeis. Josh went to Tufts. And then I went off to school in Boston, determined to find my own product. And I think Josh introduced me to these great bagels on Harvard Avenue, Jaffe's Pick-A-Chick. And I had a couple other places. I said, Josh, I really like this place, Kupel's, which is still there on Harvard Avenue. He said, oh, no, we got to go to Jaffe's. He took me to Jaffe's. Jaffe's was fantastic. I'm thinking about these bagels. I'm thinking, this might make for a good business. I didn't know much about bagels other than what I was learning in Boston and Brookline and finding out that there's a lot more to it. And we, of course, grew up with Lender's Bagels.
Right.
Our dad went to high school with Murray, and we knew the family. But that was really our only exposure to bagels, and primarily through the frozen food section.
Right. Well, that's what Lender's is known for. I mean, he basically invented frozen foods.
That's exactly right, and popularized the bagel.
Right.
So, you know, I find these great freshly baked bagels. I'm like, wow, this is really something. And, you know, the versatility of it. You can have them for breakfast, lox and cream cheese, or you can have it for a sandwich for lunch, or you can have it with soup, you know. And I thought it would make for a great business. And that's where it started.
I remember when we all graduated college the same year, and I remember going on job interviews, and I came out to one. It was Marcia and I were trying to figure it out. I think it was on Wacker Drive. Mm-hmm. I had this interview. We stopped for breakfast. This is before I think you were even set up. Mm-hmm. And the bagel that we ordered was like a dinner roll with a hole in it. Right. It was horrible. Mm-hmm. Did you know that about Chicago and like places in the Midwest that they didn't know how to make really good quality bagels?
You know, I think that outside of the Northeast, people really didn't know much about bagels, and they certainly didn't know how to make them.
Yeah.
Appreciate them. They really were, you know, they hadn't really emerged. So we came out to Chicago, and getting to your point, Andy, a year older, went to Brown with these guys, buddies from Chicago, and came out to and discovered that there were no bagels in downtown Chicago. So the idea of going into the bagel business was there, and we were looking for the right market. Chicago didn't have bagels there,
right.
Downtown. They had a couple places in the suburbs. One place, New York Bagel and Bialy, is still there, and mm-hmm. it's actually a very good bagel. But that was it, you know? So it was kind of a slam dunk for us because the market was here.
So your dream from the time you were an older child was entrepreneurial.
Yes.
And having the exposure to Ashley's Ice Cream, our daughter still goes there every week up in Madison, Connecticut.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
It's great. It's great.
You had this dream of being an entrepreneur. It sounds like food was where you were headed. Did the exploration of that get aided by your friends, like where you were going to point yourself geographically?
You in terms of coming to Chicago?
Right.
It was the right market.
It was the right market.
I didn't know anything about Chicago, but you know, I was excited about going into business and going into business with my brothers, and you know, I was ready to leave the Northeast.
Let's fast forward. So you guys found Jacob's Brothers Bagels. Where was it located? Where was your first storefront?
The first one was on Chicago Avenue, 50 Chicago Avenue, which is between Wabash and Rush. An area known as Streeterville, and it was a very small space, about 1,250 feet.
That's really small.
Small. And we opened up October 4th of 1983, and it it was a very difficult go to begin with. A couple factors played into that. It was about 6 steps above the street, so you'd have to walk up these stairs to go into the store. So it wasn't on street level. People had to figure it out. It was, and we had to work very hard to communicate that. Then we went into winter in 83, and it was one of the coldest winters of all time. So here we are trying to get established, hoping that people can find their way into the place. And it's cold, and not many people on the street. I remember Andy dressed up as Santa Claus and went out on the street with mini bagels, hot mini bagels, a bag of them, giving them out. And we did everything we could. We really bootstrapped it and worked very hard to make that one go.
So when did it turn, and when did you guys know you were onto something?
Well, that was, that one was a profitable location. It probably took a couple years. And we're talking a long time ago. Of course, we weren't really paying ourselves much, which is what you do.
Right.
We were living in one-bedroom apartments above the restaurant and really just trying to, keep it together. What did occur is several years later in 86, it was July of 86, we opened up our second location.
And where was that?
In the Monadnock building in the South Loop, which is a beautiful landmark building. At that time when it was built, it was the largest load-bearing structure in the world. And it's just a fantastic building. We opened it, and it was an immediate success. It's located in the heart of the South Loop. Lots of traders,
right.
Lots of foot traffic, the government buildings across the street. So it was really the right location for us, and it did very well.
Did you benefit from word of mouth? Was that
I think
what
that,
did it?
I mean, that was part of it, but I think primarily it was the outstanding location, corner location, Jackson and Dearborn. And, we were doing big business. We were doing over $1 million in bagels.
That's amazing.
That, keep in mind, is really in 5 days because the weekends were very quiet. We were closing Sundays.
So you had your business was coming from professionals.
Yes, exactly. And we were doing a huge breakfast and lunch business.
What did you learn about differentiation of product and experience then? Because anybody can sell a bagel. Anybody can theoretically make a bagel, but you did it old school.
Yeah. Well, I think that you have to communicate what your product is. Why is this a great product? Why is it, it's a traditionally baked bagel. It's boiled in water first. It's crunchy on the outside. It's chewy in the middle. You have to know how to market your product. And I think that's one of the things that we did very well with Jacobs Brothers, and I think it's something we do very well with Peace and Bro Bagel.
Let's talk about one important aspect. With your three brothers, you all had your own area of dominant influence in the business, and I'm gathering yours was marketing and promotion.
Marketing.
Would that
and
be right?
Product, yeah, absolutely.
So what did you set out to do to distinguish Jacobs Brothers Bagels as a you-gotta-have-it thing?
One of the things we did early on is the first name of the bagel place was a very generic name. It was called the Bagel Bakery. And, I suggested that we call it Jacobs Brothers and, work on that identity, that they're real people behind the operation. Our great uncles had a grocery store on State and Chapel called Jacobs Brothers Market. So that's where Jacobs Brothers came from. And everyone thought that it was a good idea. And our ad guys created this really cool turn-of-the-century logo that, had this very established look to it.
So it looked like it had a heritage type of thing.
Exactly. And he was like, it was kind of funny because, I would meet someone and say, I would introduce myself as Bill Jacobs of Jacobs Brothers. Jacobs Brothers? We thought the Jacobs Brothers were dead, Because it really had that very old established look to it.
So Stu Katz, you and Billy have known each other since probably grade school. What do you think that Billy and the brothers did with the Bagel Bakery and then later on with Peace that created a sense of experience, a sense of place?
Well, in the early days of Jacob's Brothers Bagels, I came out for about a week to ostensibly help and just kind of see what was going on. And the thing that always impressed me, and you know, my parents owned a restaurant in New Haven, so I had some knowledge of the food service industry and how it was not very easy. So I could see that he really had a commitment to the quality of the product was the first thing, and also making sure that the customers were getting what they needed. You know, I have to tell you, even after 30-something years, he maintains that, like, making sure that the customers are getting what they want, whether it's a delivery or a big catering order or something like that. He has a relentless commitment to the customer experience. So when you have a relentless commitment to the customer experience and you have a very high quality product, those two things, I think, are the, you know, success elements.
Like a lot of companies do when they're successful, they scale, and yours did too. You scaled in terms of revenue, but also in terms of locations. And how big did Jacob's Brothers Bagels become? How many storefronts did you have?
20.
You had 20 yeah. storefronts.
Right.
How many people did you have working for you?
Hundreds of people. And for me, frankly, it wasn't a time that I really enjoyed, because I really like knowing customers, knowing all my employees. That was challenging for me. So, and we grew because we acquired brewers in this, in the Chicago market, because brewers came in and things didn't work out so well, and they're like, would you like to acquire our units? And we did.
So that, so your scale came from acquisition.
That,
you didn't
yes,
have
we
a
did.
Natural
we had 7 Jacob's Brothers, and then we acquired 13 brewers.
An end came to Jacob's Brothers. You decided to exit out of the business. You sold your assets, and your brothers moved on, right?
Yes.
What do each of them do?
Well, Andy, for a couple years, ran a not-for-profit. So he was in that world for a number of years. And then he is now a financial advisor for Bernstein, doing great, taking care of his people, and he's enjoying his career. Peter's done a number of things. He was in the antique business. He wrote poetry, and it's hard to imagine someone making money in poetry, but Pete, in 1998, won a $20,000 grant for writing poetry.
Oh, that's fantastic.
But that's, you know, that's just an indication of how good he is and how smart he is.
Yeah.
And now he's recently was in the real estate business, and now he's an artist. So he has many skills and lives a block away from me.
Who did we leave out?
Up north. Steve.
We left out Steve.
Well, Steve also... known as, we like to refer to him as Gummo.
Gummo?
Gummo, like the
oh,
Marx
Gummo,
brother,
like Marx, the like the Marx
brothers,
brother, yeah.
Who's never around. he's in New Haven, and he practices law with my first cousin, Bruce.
Yeah.
And Bruce's daughter, and my dad, my 89-year-old dad.
That's incredible.
So, who still goes into work.
That's great.
You can't
yeah.
keep him away.
Yeah.
That's great.
It keeps him going, and he loves doing it.
So you exit out of the business, and what are you thinking?
First, my brothers and I always miss the great pizza that we grew up eating. We could not find a great thin crust pizza here. So, you know, I had always thought about trying to do Sally's style pizza, New Haven style pizza here in Chicago.
Okay, so let's stop right there. Yeah. So we three, I've known you guys since we were young kids, but it was you two who introduced me to Sally's Abitz,
right,
which is how you pronounce it. Sally's Pizza, if you will, Worcester Square tradition in New Haven. Let's start with the style of pizza, Napolitano style pizza. What is that about? What makes it unique to the world?
Well, it's how it's made. Every pizza is hand formed. Every piece of dough is stretched out, topped, with the right balance of sauce and cheese and toppings. And it's not about how much to pile on. It's about, you know, being able to taste the flavors. It's a beautiful crust that is chewy and it's crunchy, and you hold it in your hand and you fold it over. And that's really what it's all about.
Right.
I remember Sally Consiglio telling me, said, you don't throw it up in the air. Point was, you don't want to destroy the gluten that's in the dough.
Now that I think about it, I never saw him throw
they
a pie.
They don't throw it. You don't throw it. No, because you don't want to destroy the gluten in that dough.
I didn't realize how good Sally's Pizza was until my family left New Haven and we moved to suburban D.C.
Yeah.
My mom and dad took me to some restaurant, and, well, I'll just clean it up here. My father described it as something like a Ritz cracker with red sauce
with
on
ketchup,
top and something
right.
resembling cheese.
Right.
And it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was just horrible. And it made me really want to, I mean, it really made me want to come back to New Haven and have Sally's.
Yeah.
So you're out in Chicago, and I mean, I don't know the food scene here that well, but I do know about deep dish, and I can't eat it. I look at it and I go, I can't. I just can't.
Right.
Did you see the opportunity and the opposition, like coming into
Absolutely.
Enemy territory and saying, I'm going to take this over, or at least I'm going to create my mark with a New Haven style pie?
Absolutely.
How'd that happen?
Well, the idea was there, right? Yeah. And you know, getting to your point, there were plenty of naysayers. It's like, Chicago's known for deep dish pizza. Mm-hmm. That is what Chicago is. And people were telling me, you can't go into Chicago with a New Haven style pizza, because frankly, not many people know where New Haven is, let alone what New Haven style pizza is. But I was confident that if we were able to come close to replicating the great pizza that we enjoyed growing up in New Haven on Worcester Street, that it would be well received. Because you don't have to tell people that something is good. You know, they put it in their mouths and they're like, this is damn good stuff, you know? So I was confident with that. You know, the communication thing with New Haven is something that I knew was going to take some time, and it did. Today, New Haven is,
yeah,
is
it's everywhere.
Recognized. It's everywhere.
To the point where we went to a concierge yesterday and they said, oh, what are you doing tomorrow? Oh, we're going to go visit our friend Billy Jacobs. Oh, from Peace Chicago. Yep.
Nice.
So you've done a really good job. Now, you've been doing this 18 years next month or this month?
18 years, yeah. July, actually, end of July.
I didn't bring you an anniversary present. You know, 18 is porcelain, so
right.
I'll have to send you something.
We like to say that our pizza can now vote and go to war, but we won't get into that.
Yeah, right.
We're going to leave that one out. Dan, getting back to your point about you moving to Washington and finding out that not all pizza is great. We grew up, my dad telling us, referring to Sally's, this is the best pizza in the world. But we didn't know anything about the world because we never left New Haven. But when I went to Boston, the pizza wasn't good.
Right.
You know, but he was right, and you were right.
Stew Cats, talk to me about your Sally's experience.
My parents have confirmed that my Sally's experience started before I was born.
In utero.
Yes.
Oh.
And probably for him, too, if I had to guess. That they went there while my mother was pregnant with me, and I always remember going to Sally's as something that I looked forward to, even as a little kid. And the pizza was very good. Of course, me, my mother, and my father each liked different things on pizza, so we always got three smalls, you know, one for High, one for my mother, and one for me. Everybody could have whatever they wanted. And as I grew older and obviously, you know, through high school, our high school was 4 minutes from Sally's. Sally's used to be open for lunch one day a week, and Bill and I would go there for lunch, you know, when we could, which was fantastic.
So you'd walk from high school to...
Or drive, yeah. I don't think we would make that walk. That's probably not a good walk to make. But we would drive over and have lunch there on a Friday. And we would have special occasions there. Someone's big birthday, or bring the entire staff of the summer camp that you and I worked at to Sally's for, you know, 70 or 80 people showing up at Sally's. So it really became ingrained, you know, a place to take a first date. You know, the thing about Sally's that Bill did not want to replicate, and believe me, I love Sally's as much as the next person, but let's be candid, people were going to Sally's for the pizza, not so much for the ambiance, or if you were not a regular customer, quite frankly, the customer service. So people that, you know, people like Bill and I who had the secret phone number or could, you know, not wait in line despite the fact that there was a line because Sal and his family used to go to my father's restaurant because they lived in Westville. So they would go to High's, you know, for lunch and then go down to Sally's to work. So Bill and I had a different Sally's experience than a lot of people because we had backstage passes, essentially.
So Sally's, as I recall, couldn't have been more than, I don't know, 1,800 square feet. Couldn't, total, right? It was pretty tight.
Ten, yeah.
And in the wintertime, when it was 12 degrees outside, people would stand in line for, like, time in memoriam to get in there. Mm-hmm. And you always knew when there was somebody new there because they had these wild-eyed look like, okay, what's going to happen next? And to Stu's point, you were going there for the food, not the experience.
Right.
The experience was not putting a quarter in the jukebox and listening to Frank Sinatra sing, which, of course, to those who didn't know Sally's, it was what, like Knotty Pine, like paneling and pictures of Frank Sinatra, very old school. It's quite a mental picture to be in there and sit there in a booth crammed in with your fellow pizza lovers. To Stu's earlier reference, the experience of peace. You start with a greeter, right? And how does that experience go along a timeline during the customer's time in your restaurant?
I don't think that, and we certainly haven't recreated the wheel on this one. You know, there's certain things that you do in a restaurant where you have a host and you go through the stages. You seat the customer, you provide menus, you get drinks, you know, and they have this experience. But it's really up to us to make sure that we execute on all these levels, that we have a good host, that we have good servers, that our products are great. So I think that what I learned, obviously, and to Stu's point, is that what mistakes not to make, always make sure that we're doing the very best that we can and making sure that the experience is excellent every time.
You're doing a great job with that because it seems to me anybody who I mention peace to who lives in Chicago has either been there or knows about it and wants to go there. But let's pivot and talk about something we referred to earlier when your eyes kind of crossed when I asked you about the number of locations and the number of employees you had. It seemed very clear to me that one of the things you were really bothered by is you didn't know the talent that worked for you. You wanted to have like a family experience with them. Mm-hmm. So how is it now? And what can you tell me about people who work there now? How long have they been there? What's their story relative to peace?
You know, we couldn't be where we are today without them. And one of the proudest things that I can say is that we still employ some of the same people who opened the restaurant 18 years ago. And those who didn't have been with us for many years. So we're clearly doing right by them, and they're doing right by us and doing their job. But, you know, the bottom line is it's been a great experience for them, and we clearly have a very good culture. You know, we really like to, we talk about family, engendering, right, you know, feeling of family, which is really what peace is all about. So yeah, all these things work together. You have to have great people to get it done, and you have to take care of your people. You know, you make them feel a part of it, and we've done a very good job of that, and I'm proud to say that, you know, we now provide benefits for our people. And it's just been an incredible experience for me.
You know, just one more thing about the staff. The restaurant industry is legendary for turnover. Mm-hmm. Legendary. So when you consider in a large enterprise like Bill has, that has maybe 125 approximately
yes.
employees,
yes.
not only how low the turnover is in general, but how many people have been there 5, 9, 11, 15, you know, 18 years, that really says something about how he runs it, because clearly there's plenty of other restaurants in Chicago any of these people might be able to get a job at if they wanted to.
You guys have worked extremely hard, and you have people that are loyal to you as they would be your three brothers and you to them. Tangentially, you have a designation as being the top single unit operation in terms of revenue across the among pizzerias across the country.
For one unit independently owned.
Independently owned.
Yes.
That's got to be because of your people.
Absolutely. Well, it's because of the people and because of their ability and their commitment to putting out a great, great product. So you got to obviously have the product there, but they get it done. And they do it every day and a half.
So when somebody new comes to you to work, how do you introduce them to your culture? What happens so that they become part of the Peace family quickly?
You know, that's a very good question. But I think that we have such bright and sensitive people that it's almost a seamless transition. And let's just say that not everyone stays, because the process is when you work at Peace, if you're not working in the kitchen and you want to become a server, there's a process. You start as a host and you work your way up. Start at the bottom. We have never hired a server since we opened up the place. The process of becoming a server takes time. You're a host, then you're a food runner, and it could take over a year to become a server. Bartenders, those opportunities are even fewer. But there's a commitment there that, you know, you've got to be there and you have to put your time in. And it's, you know, and it doesn't always work out, because not everyone can wait a year to become a server. But when they do, it's incredible. I mean, they stay there because they've worked hard and they're treated well and they're finally making really good money.
Next time in part two of our conversation with Billy Jacobs and Stu Katz. Well, what was Wicker Park like back in those days?
Very sketchy.
Sketchy.
Sketchy. You know, I would say there were, you know, prostitutes and pimps and drug addicts walking up and down North Avenue. And that was happening until, I don't know, 2006 or 7. Very sketchy.
Thanks again to Billy Jacobs and Stu Katz for walking the tightrope with us. Our success is your success, but we cannot build our community without your help and support. So if you haven't done so already, please join the Dan Smullen Experience to get our newsletter offering information, tips, and hacks to help you succeed in doing meaningful work. To sign up, simply click the Subscribe to the Dan Smullen Experience newsletter button on our homepage at dansmullen.com. Fill out the short form, then click the subscribe button at the bottom of the page, and you'll be on your way. Also, become a regular listener of the Tightrope with Dan Smullen podcast. You can easily find current and past episodes by keywording the Tightrope with Dan Smullen at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, on our website at dansmullen.com, or wherever you choose to listen. And don't forget to show your support on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter. You can locate our social media buttons at the upper right corner of our webpages at dansmullen.com. From Washington, D.C., this is The Tightrope. I'm your host, Dan Smullen. And do remember this, our best days lie ahead. Have a great and successful week, everyone.